former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Thanks for hanging out with us, everybody, on this Tuesday edition of The Lombardi Line, presented by DraftKings. Will Hill stepping in for Michael Lombardi today. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. We're coming at you from coast to coast still, even though it's not Michael on the desk today, which is always fun. Will, thanks again for hanging out with us. We so appreciate it. Obviously, the All-Star Home Run Derby yesterday ended in a bang, which was quite fun for what was a slow starting event. And we'll talk plenty of baseball in about 15 minutes when Jared Smith joins the program, get some of his opinions on the All-Star game that's coming up later on tonight. We also have Chris the Bear Felica, who's going to be joining us this hour, which is your partner in crime on the Bear Bets podcast. And he does such a great job with Fox Sports. Okay, how awkward am I going to be as the third wheel to that conversation, by the way? I'm mentally preparing for it.
Oh, it's going to be so awkward. No, it's not. Come on. We all like each other. So I know he likes you, and we all get along here. He did eat at a very fancy restaurant last night, which Ooh. You're going to have to ask him about. Yeah.
Yes.
He went ham on some White Castle. So I know he was excited about that. Which I find disgusting. I have to say, I'm not above fast food. Give me some Arby's, give me some Chick-fil-A. I'm not above the fast food. I think I tried White Castle once. Oof. No, thank you. Maybe it was just a bad experience.
I have no hate for White Castle at all. I'm here for it. But I am shocked that you dropped Arby's there in fast food you don't have a problem with. I feel like I am constantly trying to pound the table on Arby's behalf because people say it's disgusting. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Arby's is unbelievable. Don't hate the player, hate the game.
It's funny. We mentioned Arby's on the Bear Bets pod, and I guess somebody from Arby's heard it or something and sent a bunch of food to the podcast. Of course, they film in New York and I'm doing it from home, so I didn't get to involve myself in that. But yeah, it was good to know they're listening. But yeah, very pro Arby's. So
there
some
we go.
Half pound roast beef, some of the milkshakes. Yes. Come on, let's do this.
Yes, like the curly fry game is strong. I'll take an apple turnover. Thank you very much. Arby's knows what they're doing. Some people just like to hate. I don't know what to do about it.
I think Matt Heumann's got the fast food rankings usually sometime around the summer, late July, early August. So that's something we'll have to look forward to here.
Every year I'm checking to see if Bojangles rises in the rankings or not. We've had consistent upward mobility, even if it's just a spot or two. So fingers crossed that Bojangles continues to get the respect it so clearly deserves. Speaking of, Southern type cuisine, SEC Media Days are underway right now from Dallas, which just feels a little bit odd, but that's what happens when you have new additions like Texas and Oklahoma to the footprint. And it's day two of four. Yesterday, a handful of teams and head coaches took to the podium, including Brian Kelly and Lane Kiffin, who I want to play some sound from here. Let's start on the LSU side of things, who anybody that has followed Brian Kelly in his career has recognized, and it's been a big talking point this offseason. Year three tends to be when Brian Kelly's teams take that next step up. His third year as the head coach at Cincinnati in 2009, the Bearcats went 12-0, played in the Sugar Bowl. When he was at Notre Dame in 2012, year three, team goes 12-1, makes a national title game, although we don't want to talk about what happened in that game against Alabama, neither here nor there. He was asked about the year three of it all for LSU while on the podium, and here's what he had to say.
This is the most accountable team that I've had. This has got the best leadership that I've had here at LSU. And not because they're better kids. It's just that they've been at this process now for 3 years. There's trust within the ranks. They're trusting each other. They're trusting the coaching. They're trusting what we're doing on a day-to-day basis. So that has generally led to success on the field. Now, all those teams in year three have caught the ball, tackled the football, played their best when their best is needed. You know, all those things we haven't done yet. But the similarities are what I've just laid out is they've been the most accountable. They've been the most trusting. They've had the best leadership, and this team does as well.
Now, Will, in year three of his previous situations, he didn't have a Heisman Trophy winner and three first-round picks on one side of the ball also leaving. When you look at LSU this year, what are your thoughts on your expectations for the Tigers?
Going to be tough. Going to be tough with that schedule and the number sitting at 9. I look at that, and hey, if you get to 10 and beat me, you beat me. I'm probably at least going to get my money back when you look at the schedule. At A&M, at Florida, they do still have Bama. I know it's no Saban, but DeBoer is a good coach. Oklahoma, Ole Miss is a tough game. They're really going to get to 10 at USC, or not USC, not at USC, but a neutral game with USC. I don't know. And I don't know if he loses three or four games with the money they're paying him. Is that a program? Is that a fan base who is going to be, all right, we know we lost three or four games. That's fine. That was a good season. They're good kids, like Chip Kelly's, like Brian Kelly says, as long as they're good kids, we're happy. I don't know how that's going to play if they lose a few games. Lincoln Riley, I think, is in the same position too, where a lot of these fan bases and a lot of these coaches with the money they're making with Kelly, with Lincoln Riley, you're not paying them that much money to lose three or four games. So that's a thing too, where, hey, you lose a couple games early, it's not no big deal. These kids are great. It's, hey, the expectations are very high at these programs. So keep that in mind too. That can affect the team. To me, it would be under, if anything. I worry about the quarterback, the defense. I do have some concern.
You're getting even money on the under nine where things sit right now at DraftKings. But the big question mark, I think a lot of people rightfully so, have still about LSU is their defense. You know, even with the turnover that they have at those skill positions, the defense really, really struggled last year, and specifically their secondary. I'm not sure how much better they are. Now, he answered a lot of questions about that yesterday as well, talking about a lot of young players from that unit last year have reps now that they didn't have last season, and they should be better. And he feels good about the pieces that they brought in. He also feels very confident in Garrett Nussmeier, who's kind of taken the bull by the horns now that he's the starter and making that transition from backup to being the guy, that there's a lot of confidence there. Obviously, we've seen flashes of him, but is it enough to contend in the SEC at the top? I just don't know. I'm there with you from that standpoint. Now, you mentioned Nick Saban. He was very complimentary of the way that Ole Miss has been building up their roster and the talent that they have. The knock on Ole Miss, specifically when it comes to the top of the conference and the games we saw last year with them against an Alabama and against a Georgia, was they didn't necessarily have the physicality to compete. This year, Saban says they do. A lot of people think that they do with the transfer class that they brought in this year. And Lane Kiffin addressed the sky-high expectations on the podium yesterday and used a Sabanism to do it as well.
Plenty of teams over years in all sports have been ranked high and haven't played well, and been ranked low and played really well. So none of that means anything. I just very appreciative to Coach Saban, who called the other day and then just stopped me and talked to me there. So kind of in respects to Coach Saban's terms, you know, this is really, as he said, this is a rat poison situation here, to have all this attention on our players, and it means nothing.
The rat poison. But this is new pressure for the program that hasn't had in a really, really long time. And it seems like at least Kiffin is approaching it from the right way. But when you look at their season win total at 9.5, they are 6-1 in the SEC title odds, -130 to be a playoff team this year. How do you anticipate Ole Miss living up to those expectations?
Yeah, and rat poison is really just another term for hype. There's a lot of hype around this team, which the hype, the kids hear it and they want to believe it. And they sometimes, hey, you rest on that. Hey, everyone thinks we're going to be good. And that confidence, you can be a little overconfident. So I get that. I agree with that. I just think there is enough talent and the schedule's friendly enough to get over. Sounds like they've done well here in the transfer portal. Defensively, you know they're going to be able to score. Dart is, speaking of trendy, he's a very trendy Heisman pick. 15-1, I think it's a decent bet. I don't know that it's a great bet, but look, Lane's going to run up the score when he has the chance. They're going to have plenty of stats. They got plenty of weapons. The skill guys are really good. Defense better. I think they'll win 10 games. I'm at the position I need to see it to believe it, in our terms of like, hey, they're going to win the SEC championship or make a run in the college football playoff. He doesn't have a track record of taking his teams to that level. We'll have to see it. And look, he's aggressive. He's going to go for it on fourth down, but there's just something missing with him and his team sometimes where I need to see it before I believe it. But getting to 10, I mean, look, Furman, Middle Tennessee State, at Wake, Georgia Southern, Kentucky at home. They're really, and I like these teams with a easy cluster, because you go in, when you have a tough cluster, when you have a Florida cluster, mentally taxing, physically exhausting. It's the opposite when you have an easy schedule where you can just kind of, hey, we can play 75-80% of our best game and we can still be 4-0, 5-0. I like that. So generally more optimistic than less so with Ole Miss. How do you feel?
Yeah, it very much so is a schedule that builds. And if you want to throw that back up on the screen, Elliot, they open the season against Furman, followed by Middle Tennessee State, at Wake Forest, Georgia Southern, before they get into SEC play, where, again, we're still easing in a bit because you start with Kentucky at home, then you go to South Carolina before you head to Death Valley at LSU, which, quite frankly, has been a house of horrors for Ole Miss historically. So if they can ease their way into the schedule like that and have a good performance in Baton Rouge before they have Georgia a couple weeks later, I think that's a very interesting approach and way to look at this team about how they're building confidence in their game. Ole Miss is a team for me that my big question mark is more so about the number of transfers that they bring in. And I know from a talent standpoint, it's the top transfer portal class in the country, right? But similar to what we talk about with Colorado and all of the pieces that they have in and out of the program, it's like, how do you get all of these different personalities coming from all over in a big batch to like match up chemistry wise? And they do have really good veteran leadership. I'm not taking away anything from that. It just doesn't feel like it's an easy thing to have that all come together. You have to have a really good culture and core. And I don't know enough about Ole Miss, quite frankly, to know if they have that.
Good team though. Good players, both sides of the ball. They're gonna be good. They're gonna be fun to watch. Do you think Dart's a legit Heisman?
Yeah.
Getting it like 15-1, is that enough for you to make a bet or not?
I would like a little bit more bang for my buck on Jackson Dart because of obviously the situation. I mean, it's year three for him, right? And I remember watching him at USC where he had bursts, and it seems like at Ole Miss, the combination of him and Lane Kiffin has continued to build. I'm excited for him. I don't hate the bet. I just wish that you could get maybe a little bit more on the number.
If you're looking, I don't know if they have odds to be the number one pick in the draft, but sometimes like this early, this is a year where it's kind of wide open. If he has a big year, he might be, you think he'll be a good pro? Is he considered on that level in terms of a pro? I'm just thinking if he has a good college season, that could help his draft stock. And if you find a long number on him, I don't see any numbers, just an idea.
I mean, there are a lot of guys that if they're able to put a good season together, they get looked at that way, right? So why not for Jackson Dart if he has a good season in the SEC where a lot of eyeballs are going to be on him? We're going to hit the break. When we come back, we're going to flip over to a little Major League Baseball action. The All-Star Game coming up tonight in Arlington at Globe Life Field. What does Will and Jared Smith have to say about all of that? We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Welcome back to the Lombardi Line. Now's the time to sign up for our VSiN football special, because before the end of July, you can get full VSiN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for our early bird discount of $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. With VSiN Pro, you get instant access to our daily best bets, the exclusive betting splits data, proven betting systems and analysis from our professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and so much more, including our special edition betting guides, like out now, our NFL betting guide, packed with detailed team, division, and conference analysis, plus season win totals, futures, props, and awards best bets. Our expert insights and in-depth coverage will keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the season. Don't wait, though. Sign up before the end of July so that you can get full VSiN Pro access through the Super Bowl with that early bird discount. VSiN.com/subscribe is how you can do it. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Will Hill in for Michael Lombardi today as we welcome you back to the program. I'm Stormy Bonantoni. And time to get into a little Major League Baseball action out there at Globe Life Field. Coming up tonight, we have the MLB All-Star Game. Yesterday, Teoscar Hernandez came through as the home run derby champ. We had some exhilaration there late, which was really fun. And apparently, our next guest cashed in a little bit on Teoscar yesterday. Jared Smith joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line, host and betting analyst here at VSiN, live on the line on Stadium. You can also catch him all football season on Fox Sports Radio. Jared, what's going on?
Oh, yeah, we did. It's good to talk to you fine people today. We did get a little bit of a slice of Teoscar Hernandez last night. It was during my comprehensive pitcher breakdown, right? Everyone's excited. That's the most exciting part of the baseball season is the home run derby pitcher breakdown that I put out yesterday. I actually saw some positive stuff coming from Teoscar's pitcher, Dino Abel, who threw to a bunch of guys in the past, including Albert Pujols and Jock Peterson. It turned out to be a pretty decent bet. I didn't think he had a chance there after that first round. I didn't think he was going to make the semis. But he ended up getting into the final, and I would say it was a rather uneventful home run derby all in all.
Jared, you are the godfather of first innings. We've got like minus 150 on a Nerfy tonight. Yes, run is slightly plus money. Obviously, Skeens is as good as it gets. Burns is on the other side. What are you looking for here in this first inning?
Yeah, I mean, I think the consensus Nerfy, consensus under tonight, this is one of the – this game reminds me of the postseason. This is a number that you will likely see again in the postseason. In fact, last year in the playoffs, I thought because the Nerfies just get so overbaked that the Yerfy didn't even have to go 500 and you would likely finish profitable for the playoffs. It went slightly over 500, and the Yerfie was popular. That's usually where I land in these games that, you know, you have these aces on the mound, and obviously everyone's betting the Nerfie. No one's betting the Yerfie tonight. So you're not getting a fair shake there. I think you're going to have a lot of people bet it and sweat it tonight, but it's not a bet that I'm very excited about. In fact, again, when we get into these situations and when we get back to the playoffs, I'm going to run it back again, where I'm going to probably be betting almost every Yerfie in the postseason, because unlike the regular season, there's so much more attention on that market when you get to the playoffs, because every pitcher, every inning, every pitch is vital. And I think just because of the nature of that market, it's not a great bet tonight, but I'm sure that won't prevent people from making it.
Jared, just general curiosity, because, like, as Will mentioned, you're the godfather of the first inning. You track so much data for these opening innings. How hard is that to keep track of? How much goes into that? Like, I am just generally very, very curious of how you got to where you are with this.
I appreciate your concern. I don't have much free time on my hands during baseball season. This week is a reprieve for me, not having to track these games. So it started in 2021, and it was when I was working at PitchWise at the time, and I had a lot more free time on my hands than I usually did in that era, because I was only working for one network, unlike now where I'm working for like 75 different entities, and I just have a lot more on my plate. And we were trying to figure out ways to make baseball season more fun, because, you know, obviously football is kind of the end all be all. And then you get into baseball season, you know, especially after the NCAA tournament, April, May, June, July, especially, there's just not a lot going on. And I, you know, butted heads with my boss about some different ways we can kind of drum up some stuff. And I told him, I was like, this was a bet that I was always interested in. I just never, you know, I've been betting it for years. I just never really put a lot of thought into it. It was always, hey, these two guys are really good pitchers, let's bet the Nerfie. And I said, well, let's put some thought into it and let's try to track this. And, you know, you'll cut out some time for me every day to kind of figure out a way to do it. And it kind of took on a life of its own. I would say the first month of me doing this, I want to say I started it late in 21. I didn't start it until like May or June. So I needed some catch up time. And then once I kind of got to midseason, I felt comfortable where I had a decent amount of data to go off of. And that's when I really started to put out the spreadsheets and the more normal stuff that you see today for me on a daily basis. But it started almost out of curiosity, because I was curious if this was something that I could be profitable in. I think the jury's still out on the Nerfie being a profitable bet long term. I think this year has changed my ideals with it, because I do think the landscape of baseball is changing where the Nerfie is more viable. You get guys like Paul Skenes that burst onto the scene and throw 102 miles an hour. You get more openers. You get more fluctuation with the schedule, more interleague play, more teams playing in stadiums they're not used to playing, where I think the first inning can be a bit of an adjustment. So tracking it has helped me kind of get my hands, wrap my arms around what's actually happening in the market. And now that it's been 2 or 3 years of it, yeah, like I feel like I have a pretty good sense of what's a good bet and what's not a good bet. Now, the one thing I'll say about this, Stormy, a good bet or not, I've had great bets that get 50, 60 cents of CLV and they lose on the first pitch. It's a very cruel market, but I do think because of the instant gratification nature of it, it's a popular market, which is why the information has done well in terms of the viewership.
Jared, how about the game tonight just in general? Side, total, any feel for that? And do you have a sleeper pick for MVP? This MVP market is fascinating because you get some really good players. It's some long, long numbers. What do you think of the game here tonight?
I would look to a relief or, not a starter as an MVP. I think because, right, the game's going to be decided late, you would think, unless it's like a 6-7-0 blowout early, and then you might get someone who hit a home run early in the game or maybe a pitcher. But to me, someone who decides the game late is probably going to be the MVP, and it's likely going to be a reserve or a bullpen guy that comes in and closes it out or has the big hit late. So I would look to that. I do think the price is right on the side. I think the American League is the better team with their starters. I think the National League maybe has a little bit better of a bench. I also think the under makes a ton of sense, but I don't think it's a fantastic wager in terms of value. Like, I think 7 is probably fair. 7.5, but maybe -115, I think, is where I maybe would draw the line. But, you know, the under's been a very popular bet. I think the average run scoring over the last decade has been like 6.5. So under 7.5 certainly makes sense. 13-4 to the under since 05. So to me, that's the way that most people will go. I can't argue with that. This to me is a very difficult game to bet, because good luck trying to figure out who comes into the game when and how the buttons get pushed. I think that's what makes this game specifically difficult. And you don't even know who's going to play. Like, there might be guys that you don't even know are not even have any chance of playing in the game because of extenuating circumstances. So a lot of moving parts, but the price is probably fair. I think the American League's got the better starters. I think the National League better relievers and better bench, and I would say under makes sense to me too.
Well, Jared, this is a question then for both you and Will. I would love you to follow up on it. How big of a difference for you is the 7.5 and the 7 in a game like this?
Will, do you want to start with first there, bud?
I think it is important. I'd rather just pay for the juice because at 3-3, now this is a little different because the extra innings isn't there. They're going to decide on a home run derby. So maybe they're going to score at 3-3 if it's tied after 9. I don't know, but I'd rather just pay the extra juice for the 7.5. You already missed the boat on 8. I have a hard time playing under 7.
Yeah, 5-3 is a very popular score line I'm seeing. I think 7.5 with slight juice to the under is as far as I would go. 7 is definitely a no bet for me because then 6, you need it to be under the average of what it's been, right? So we're getting the mark over the last 10 years, averaging 6.8 runs per game. So if you're betting 7, in order for you to win that bet, it has to be 6. And then you're asking it to be a below average game. I think that's asking a lot.
Okay, Jared, last 40 seconds or so, looking ahead to the second half, is there any team that you are already looking out for to buy in on or fade on?
Man, I don't know what's going on with the Brewers. I'll be honest. I've been down on them all season. I was down on them last year. They have continued to prove me wrong. Maybe I'm just not getting a good read on this team. But what they did in the first half is not sustainable. To have a run differential amongst the tops in Major League Baseball with their rotation. Now, they did go out and they had Aaron Civale, and I think that helped. But I think St. Louis is still priced appropriately to come back and maybe win this division. And you're getting a better number on them now than you were pre-flop. And, you know, they got a hole to dig out of. They're 4 games back in the loss column, and that's why the market's priced the way that it is. But I think they're poised for positive regression in the second half with a negative run differential in the first half, whereas Milwaukee, I would say, is the opposite. So I would still feel comfortable playing the Cardinals, let's say, at around 5-1 to win the NL Central.
Great stuff, Jared. Appreciate your time today, pal.
Good luck, everybody.
That's Jared Smith. You can catch him here on VSiN, live on the line, on Stadium, and all football season each and every weekend on Fox Sports Radio. Speaking of Fox Sports, the man, the myth, the legend, Chris the Bear Felica, just stepped into the studio. He's ready to hop on the desk with us in a moment. Don't go anywhere. We're diving into all things college football coming up next.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Will Hill in for Michael Lombardi today. Stormy Bonatoni with you as we welcome you back to the Lombardi Line, diving into all things college football as we welcome in studio here at Circa Resort and Casino, Chris the Bear Felica, doing awesome work at Fox Sports, and of course the Bear Bets podcast with our own Will Hill. I was very excited, by the way, yesterday. I was a part of a gambling group chat with Will, and I was like, oh, man, I feel like the podcast. Very, very cool. How are you?
You're welcome anytime.
Thank you.
In the podcast. Just gets a little rough at times. What stays in the podcast? What happens in the podcast stays in the podcast.
It's very fun to see the back and forth that you all have. Yeah, like Sammy fun. P's great. Jeff's great. Yep. And I hear you are out here, though, this week specifically for something here at Circa.
I am, yeah. I just met up with my man Tom from Vegas Football Proxy and entered Circa Survivor. I don't do millions. I'm dead money in millions. I'm not gonna waste that. But yeah, we're back taking another shot at Survivor and walked over to the Nugget as well and entered that football contest. See, I like the Nugget contest. It's the only one left that has college football in it.
Yeah.
So there's no Will Hill contest. No one else has a college contest. So yeah, we're good. We're fun.
Bear, we're gonna get to some college football, but Stormy's a little down on the Jets. She's negative. I am optimistic. I'm cautiously optimistic. I understand all of the pitfalls that are possible. Let me ask it this way. Where are you at with this team, and what's more of a concern for you? Rodgers getting hurt again, or Rodgers just age catching up to him and not playing well off the injury?
The latter. Rodgers just age, really? And not playing. I think his health is fine, but I think it's just Father Time gets everyone in the factor of coming off of the injury. But I did this last year, and we've talked about this, Will. Like, Literally, first week of August last year, I sent all my Jet fan buddies a text. I'm far too excited about the season. You know what that means. And then, of course, four plays into the season, I took a screenshot of that text and resent it to everybody and said, this is why we don't get excited. But it's hard not to be excited again with the moves that they made to improve the offensive line, which was the biggest weakness they had last year. Breece Hall is one of the better backs in the league. The defense is loaded. It really just does come down to, can Rodgers perform at an average or better than average level to get to the playoffs? Because, I mean, you look at everybody, Miami's going to be down, I think, with the people they lost. Buffalo, who knows what way that's going to go. The Patriots are going to be one of the worst teams in the league. Like, if they don't make the playoffs, there's a big problem here. They won, seven games last year with nothing at quarterback. So I am cautiously optimistic, and I'm going to drink the Kool-Aid again. Well, I'm going to expose myself again and leave myself wide open for disappointment.
So, Bear, here's the thing. I drank the Kool-Aid just as much as you did last year. I was all in. The Hard Knocks thing just reeled me in. I was like, you know what, Aaron Rodgers, he's actually a pretty funny guy. Dry, like it, you know. You can tell how much the team had gravitated toward him. This year, my issue is basically not even just around Rodgers' health, but the health of so many of the pieces that they've added, right? Yep. And even up front, those offensive linemen they brought in have recent injury history.
How many games are you going to get out of Tyron Smith?
Like, correct.
For sure. You know that he doesn't have much in the tank, but we've been here before. Like, I remember when they lost to Denver, it was in the 98 AFC Championship game. They led 10-0 and couldn't hang on. It was like, next year is the year. I can remember listening to WFAN driving into the season opening game. The next year, this is the year. The coach is what Mike Franceschi referred to Bill Parcells at. And then, of course, second quarter of the year, Vinny Testaverde ruptures his Achilles and the season was over. So we've been down this road before with expectations, and that's why the Jets are a loser franchise.
well, we'll see what happens with them yet. I call them the ifers. Michael Lombardi and I on the show call them the ifers because if all of these things happen, they're going to be awesome.
There are a lot of ifers in the NFL, it seems like.
Yep.
Yeah, we were just talking Big 12. I know you were on my podcast a couple weeks ago, and a couple teams that came up, Arizona and Iowa State. Where are you at with their win totals?
Yeah, I am an under. I found an 8 on Arizona, and I went under on the Wildcats. Obviously, a new coach comes in, Jed Fish, and his staff and assistants have gone on to Washington now. And I know they've got T-Mac and Fifita at quarterback, but I think defensively they've got a lot of woes and some problems. It's nothing against Brennan, who they hire. He's done a great job wherever he has been. But I get the sense that it was kind of like a one-year overachieving excitement type thing, and a lot of people left outside of the quarterback wide receiver combo. So I am under 8 on Arizona, and I'm over 7.5 on Iowa State. I know people are going to raise their eyebrows and laugh again, because I've always been higher on Iowa State than most people. And in 2020, they were 15 yards away from winning the Big 12 and making the college football playoff that year. But I think if you look at what they did last year, they suffered kind of at some point last year by making the transition of Beck to quarterback and playing all the young receivers and the running backs. And that's only going to help them this year. You know that Hickok's always going to have a really good, aggressive defense. And you look at the Big 12, like, from Team 1 to Team 6, there's really no drop-off. Like, people are high on Oklahoma State, and I get it, but I think they still have some issues at quarterback that they need to iron out. Defensively, I don't know how they're going to be. So I see very little difference between Iowa State, who is picked to be, sixth, I think, in that league, and Oklahoma State, who is picked to win the league. So I grabbed an over 7.5 on Iowa State, and I actually grabbed them at 10-1 to win the Big 12 as well.
What's your perspective on Utah? Because, I mean, maybe for me, they're the college football version of the ifers, but I am more drinking the Kool-Aid on Utah, that Cam Rising will be healthy, that Brent Keithy will be healthy. I have faith that the defense will be elite under Kyle Whittingham once again. What do you think about this
and
team?
And it should. And it's funny, because this might be a different Utah team than we're used to seeing. Like, you being in the Mountain West, San Diego State, saw Utah physical up front, line of scrimmage, aggressive on defense up front, run the ball. Like, this, I think, is a differently built Utah-type team. So we might not see those. And they got some really good secondary players as well, and that's always kind of been a staple of Utah. But, yeah, I prefer Utah to Oklahoma State, if you're asking me to pick who should be the favorite. I think a lot of people are picking Oak State. But Keithy losing him was such a loss for that team last year. But winning the number of games that they did with the quarterback's hand that they were dealt, Whittingham, Witt's just a great coach, and I'm glad he came back. They should be the favorite in the league.
There are so many of these teams in the Big 12. It's such a compressed conference where there's so much parity. What about a team like Central Florida? Quarterback, coach, a lot of talent on defense. Could you see Central Florida being the team that at least, you know, make a title game or be a little bit of a sleeper here in this conference?
It's funny you say UCF because I had a buddy of mine who is pretty dialed into college football, and he's had a lot of success in a lot of the future bets and the Heisman bets that he made. He actually said to me the other day, he goes, I just bet KJ Jefferson to win the Heisman. And I think with Gus, like, that's a pretty natural fit at that quarterback position. So why not? You look at the two games that they warm up with against UNH and Sam Houston, and then at TCU, who knows what way it's going to go. The schedule's not easy there. You get Colorado at home and going to Gainesville. Who knows what way it's going to go for the Gators earlier in the year. But you do get Utah at home as well. You get Arizona at home. You got to go to Iowa State. Cincinnati's probably the worst team in the league. I don't hate that. Like, you could probably tell me, like, any two teams outside of, like, Arizona State and BYU and Cincinnati, and I'd be like, yeah, I could see one of those teams making the Big 12 title game.
Yeah, it's like, as much as we want to joke with Brett Yormark's comments that, hey, this is the deepest league in college football, there is a lot of potential for parity with the way that these teams are built and the schedules that they have.
And it has been, and it's just, people get, I think, a couple of things confused. Like, they get the depth with, like, national championship quality confused. Like, sure, maybe, like, the SEC and the Big Ten, have national championship type contenders at the top, but the drop off after that is great. Like, if you the Big 12, like, there is no, the depth of that league makes it difficult for teams to go 11-1, 10-2, and put themselves into college football playoff contention. And that's why I think they were the first league to put their two best teams in the conference title game. That way, to give them the better shot. And now you've seen other teams follow suit now with the automatic qualifying into the playoff.
They're not sure if you're aware of this or not, but Deion Sanders is the coach at Colorado. It's kind of going under the radar. Doesn't get a lot of attention. Nobody talks about him. 5.5, starting to creep towards 6. I'm dubious of them doing that well with the schedule. But what are your thoughts here on Colorado Deion the second year?
I was down on Colorado again. I do think they're going to beat the Bison week one. I don't think this is a North Dakota State team that is as great as they've been in years past. Same person who was just talking to about UCF and Jefferson Heisman. Again, maybe it's because they have the two best players in the league in Shadur and Hunter. He says on paper, like, Colorado has the most talent in the conference. Now, I don't know if it's those two guys bringing the rest of the team up or not. And that kind of raised my eyebrows. I mean, I already have an under 5.5 ticket on Colorado when I heard Pritch talking about Colorado yesterday. And he does make a good point. With so many of the former players that he's brought in on the coaching staff who don't have a ton of coaching experience, will that be a positive? Will that be a negative? How will the kids react? But I think they did do a better job this offseason of maybe strengthening the team. And I'll give my buddy full props if they wind up. He's like, go better Travis Hunter Heisman as well, because he's probably the best player on the team and in the league.
What is your favorite Heisman in pocket?
I bet Julian Sain at Ohio State 100-1. He's not the starting quarterback right now, but I get the sense that that competition is not fully decided yet.
Very interesting. Thank you so much for your time.
Of course, my pleasure.
Enjoy Big Noon kickoff.
We're
almost there. It's so exciting.
We are. We're about 6 weeks away. It's great.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, you'll love all of our betting tools and content available at VSiN.com. Best bets from all of our VSiN show hosts and experts each and every day. Updated betting splits, exclusive articles, including columns from our own Michael Lombardi. Odds by state, betting tools, and betting guides like our NFL betting guide out now. Available for VSiN Pro subscribers. Our college football betting guide coming out in short order, as well as we welcome you back into the Lombardi Line. Chris the Bear Felica, kind enough to stick around. My plan worked in the commercial break to get you to stay.
You guilted me into doing it.
Guilt, come on. No.
No, you did not.
Thank you for doing this, though.
I offered. I said, I'll happily hang around.
I said, I have 800 more college football questions, so please stick around. And Will, being a teammate of yours, I think probably helped the situation as well.
He did. Connecticut brotherly love.
Bear, anything we haven't got to in terms of a college football win total? Like, what's your favorite bet or one that we haven't discussed here?
I bet Arkansas under 4.5 in the SEC. I know so much buzz about Bobby Petrino going there to be the coordinator, and you bring in Taylen Green from Boise. He was kind of the quarterback he picked to be the guy. But I just look at that schedule, and outside of the opener against Arkansas Pine Bluff, I think it is, and then maybe UAB. Like, I don't see a game on that schedule where you look at it and say, oh yeah, they'll win that game. It's a near certainty. Like, the schedule is brutal. Defensively, they got some problems. I think this is a situation where they just got beat up so badly last year. I think they kind of need to be built back up, and for good reason, they are the longest shot to win the league.
And was that 200-1?
Yeah, exactly. That's not a wager worth making, but yeah, under 4.5 on Arkansas was my favorite SEC win total. What else did I bet? I bet UCLA under 5.5, which a lot of people have bet, and I think that number is still out there as well. That's another team that I think could struggle. It was funny. I pitched a couple of weeks ago on Twitter, and I got no response from the odds makers. They said I want a combined win total prop, USC and UCLA. How many combined wins for the two new LA Pac-10 newbies this year?
So, well, I mean, let's go down that road then with USC. What are your expectations for the Trojans?
Not a lot.
Yeah,
not a lot. I think they are lean on the defensive side of the ball still. I'm obviously Miller Moss played well in the bowl game, but they lost so much. Yeah, seven wins maybe. I think maybe for SC would.
That's right on the nose.
I had no idea what it even was. I wasn't even looking. But yeah, that looks amazing. They're not going to beat LSU week one for sure. And you got to go to Michigan. At least you get Penn State home and you get Notre Dame at home. But yeah, some of those 50-50 games, like Maryland on the road, is a tough one. And even, I mean, going to Minnesota, PJ Fleck always will have that team fired up and ready to go. And he's like the best out there in terms of using emotion as motivating. So they'll be running. Yeah, seven probably. So I guess if I'm under 5.5 on UCLA, and like seven, so maybe set 11.5 maybe.
Okay.
Give me an 11.5 somewhere, and I'll go under 11.5 combined wins for both teams.
Bear, with all of this realignment, when we saw Big 12, the newcomers struggle last year, how much does that factor into your handicapping, where a lot of travel, a lot of adjustments where, hey, I haven't played this team before, I don't have any familiarity? Does that factor in your handicapping, and how much does it?
I haven't given it a ton of thought yet, because The way these teams travel, and it's not like you're connecting three flights at a massive drive. I mean, I don't think it's going to – I think they did a good job with the schedules for the most part with the West Coast schools to give them either a home game the following week or a short week or an off week leading into that. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast, Nessa. I'll have to see if maybe – there's nothing that I can get ahead on, unfortunately. Like, I haven't – looked at it enough, but maybe if we notice something early on, that might be something to pay attention to.
Chris the Bear Felica joining us here on the Lombardi Line, Fox Sports, the Bear Bets podcast as well. If you haven't checked it out yet, what are you doing? Time to be a subscriber. When it comes to the difference this year with the college football playoff and the 12-team expanded format, has that impacted at all the way you're looking at some teams, more like critical thinking about can they get here, how can they get here? Any group of five teams you're looking at too?
I mean, Boise, I think, is a team that a lot of people are pointing to from the group of five to get there. But I think the biggest thing that people need to go into this eyes wide open with, and maybe people still don't necessarily know, I mean, you and Will know the format and how it is, but everyone talks about like who can win the national championship, and obviously Ohio State and Georgia are the two teams that people think can win, and then the next two teams people usually mention are Oregon and Texas. So if you look at those two teams from the Big Ten, Oregon and Ohio State, and you look at the two teams from the SEC, Georgia and Texas, one of those teams from each of those conferences is going to have to play an additional game because the conference champions get the bye. Mm-hmm. So like How does that affect your handicapping? Like, do you think Oregon and Texas can win if those are the two teams that wind up having finishing second in the league? Can those two teams win that additional first round game and then have to beat the conference championships and then beat Ohio State and or Georgia once they get to the semifinal?
Well, and also how crazy is it that, like, hypothetically now with so many conferences doing away with divisions, that these teams could play each other three times potentially, regular season, conference championship, and in the playoff?
If I gave you Ohio State and Georgia versus the field, how would you bet that? Ooh.
I feel like I would take one of them. Like, it's hard. So
you get both of them. You get Ohio State and Georgia versus everybody
what
else.
What number am I getting? What number?
That would be the question that I would love somebody who's a lot smarter than me to. So there's my second demand. I stayed for another segment. I have another demand.
Okay.
I want that prop posted somewhere.
Will, what would you pick if you didn't know the number? If you could pick Georgia and Ohio State or the field, where would you go?
I'll make the line. I'll say it. I think you made a good line. Like, I think it's right around even money. I would take the two. I think Oregon's the only other third team. After that, can you really talk into like Texas or some of these other teams? Probably not. You might even have to play minus money if you're getting both Georgia and Ohio State.
Call me crazy. I think Georgia's going to be back with a vengeance this year.
They were the best team last year. They just had an unfortunate SEC championship game. A couple of bad calls in there, and they couldn't get going until it was too late.
Like, the fact that they have lost as many games in the last three seasons as they have national championships speaks for itself. And speaking of Georgia, Kirby Smart's speaking today at SEC Media Days, day 2 of 4. Has anything stood out to you from some of the comments that you've heard coming out so far, or just SEC storylines in general you're excited about?
I love the confidence from Kirby. I mean, he is a brash, outspoken guy, and he should be confident. I mean, he's got the best team. He has a difficult schedule, but it's a team that's built to win those type of games. I'm curious, the two teams I'm curious the most about in the SEC are LSU, losing all those receivers and losing Daniels. I'm curious to see what way that goes, because I don't think it's a given that Nussmeier steps right in and wows everybody like he did in the bowl game last year. And Texas A&M. Losing Evan Stewart and losing so much there with the people that transferred out when Jimbo was gone. And Elko was a hell of a coach. And you know that from Duke and being the defensive coordinator at Notre Dame there and at A&M as well. I just wonder if they have enough offense around Connor Wegman to be able to put up a bunch of points. But LSU and A&M are the two teams in the SEC that I kind of have the questions about to see what way they're going to go.
Speaking of A&M, we're not far away from week 0, week 1. We got a lot of marquee games, A&M, Notre Dame, Florida, Miami. Anything early in the season in terms of games you're already looking at or that you'd recommend at current prices?
I bet Florida +3 against Miami, and that's as in a Miami alum. That hurts to say, but I think the brakes need to be pumped a little bit on the Canes. We've heard this and seen this before. What, they've won 10 games once in the last 20-somewhat years? Oh, but they brought in Cam Ward and they brought in Porter. You know, we heard this. Well, we brought in Brock Berlin and it was Greg Ward a couple years ago, the kid from Houston, the quarterback. Like we've heard this before. And after an off season and a year of Florida and Billy Napier getting bad mouth and he should get fired and their win total is 4.5 and they stink and like you get Miami on your home field and you're getting 3. That's an auto play for me.
So I last year did Miami's game against Temple, and you think about the season prior where Miami had this great start and then they had the letdown against Middle Tennessee. That was a big storyline for us. Yep. It's like, okay, could they have the letdown again, or are they going to show they're for real? So they show they're for real, and then Georgia Tech happens. Cristobal, like, I want to root for him, and he makes these gaffes that are so hard to defend.
It was absolutely inexcusable, and it totally – maybe what happens the rest of the season happens anyway and the deficiencies that they had in Van Dyke, the up and down. Yeah. Maybe it happened, but that just completely derailed their season.
Thank you so much again. A full half hour with the Bear. This Perfect. Was awesome. Keep crushing it, the two of you, with the Bear Bets podcast. And be on the lookout for Chris the Bear Felica, big noon kickoff each and every Saturday on your TV screens. It's going to be awesome. That's a wrap for us today on the Lombardi Line. If you're sticking around on VSiN, Sharp Money is next. Pablo Torre finds out on DraftKings Network.